You're listening to Cross Currents from KLW News. I'm Holly Kernan. And now we'll turn our attention to another state program, the University of California. The UC system saw a major change in administration earlier this summer when Janet Napolitano was appointed president. When she takes office in September, the former Homeland Security Secretary will be the first woman to hold the presidential position. UC Berkeley's administration also experienced a change this past June when Nicholas Dirks was sworn in as the university's chancellor, the faculty's highest-ranking position. One of Dirks' primary obligations in his new role is to find new funding for the university. And that's more important than ever. The numbers are stark. 10 years ago, a semester for a resident undergrad at UC Berkeley was under $3,000. This semester, the state provides only about 11% of funding, and tuition is 2.5 times higher. I spoke with Chancellor Dirks about how UC Berkeley has felt the effects of this financial gap.
I think it's been, you know, it's been traumatic at every level. It's been traumatic, obviously, for students with tuition increases. It's been traumatic for staff. And, of course, it's been traumatic for faculty because they've seen packages and compensation and research support at other universities, some public, but, of course, many private, get more and more robust over the last few years when there have just been nothing but cutbacks here in the university. On the other hand, I think it's fair to say that there is huge commitment to this university, to Berkeley, to the University of California system, and to the fact that it is a public institution. So that even now with 11% of the funding coming from the state, much less than was the case even 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago, you have a sense that there is a really, really strong public mission on the part of all the different constituencies on campus. There's a sense that that public mission means operating at a level and in ways that are profoundly different than goes on in the private sector. And that involves doing research with a sense of the importance of the public good that comes out of it. It means doing what one can to mitigate the costs of higher education for students. 40% of Berkeley students, in fact, pay no tuition at all. There are more Pell Grant recipients at the University of California and Berkeley alone than in the entire Ivy League combined. So there has been a huge commitment to continuing to make the access that used to, of course, be part of the virtually, you know, zero levels of tuition.
1960 master plan, yeah.
The 1960 master plan has continued in an odd way, counterintuitive way, through all these different kinds of efforts to maintain a strong commitment to access.
And so what's your plan? I mean, one of the things that I've read about your tenure is that you're a good fundraiser.
The current campaign at Berkeley, which was commenced in 2008 and which will conclude by the end of this calendar year, set a target that seemed pretty difficult to reach, particularly given what was going on in the economy in 2008. And it was a target of $3 billion, and we will achieve it. No sooner than we achieve that, we'll begin planning for the next campaign. And yes, I mean, the experience that I've had fundraising, I think, will come in to be extremely important here because we need to think about supporting the university in ways that obviously go well beyond the kinds of expectations for state support that used to just be taken for granted.
And do you have concerns about these kind of private-public partnerships, about bringing private money in, whether it's corporate or foundation and some of the strings attached?
It's been the case for years and years that Berkeley, like other major universities, have gone to foundations for support. But as I understand it, the important thing is to ensure that there are no strings attached, that the gifts that are made, the partnerships that are entered into and agreed upon are ones that fulfill the mission that has been defined here independent of those needs. That being said, I think we have to be more nimble in terms of taking advantage of opportunities that do exist, that do exist here in the Bay Area in California. It is clear that another institution down in the Silicon Valley has been especially nimble.
Stanford?
I think that's the name of it. I just have been told never to wear my red shirts or
red ties
again, but aside from that. And there are some things that one can learn from that. And there certainly are a lot of people who are in the Bay Area, including in the Silicon Valley, who have interests in the kind of skills, the kind of expertise, the kinds of facilities, the kinds of programs that are going on here at Berkeley, of which we can probably take better advantage.
And that's Nicholas Dirks. He's the new chancellor of UC Berkeley. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Holly Kernan. So you mentioned the S word, but you came from Columbia, from a private institution to, you know, the premier public institution in California and some would say in the world. What appealed to you about this job?
Berkeley has been not just the preeminent public university in California or in the nation, and I believe it is still that. But it's been, in fact, one of the best universities in the world by any standard. And, you know, so for an academic like me, I mean, Berkeley has always been the gold standard. It's always been one of the very top universities anywhere in the world to work at. Yes, I do come from a private university. Before that, I had been at the University of Michigan, another very fine public institution. And the move from Michigan to Columbia had some cultural adjustments that went along with it. But at the same time, I will say that even within the set of Ivy League institutions, Columbia, partly because it's in New York, partly because it's been a slightly less wealthy and well-endowed institution than some of its peers, has prepared me well for Berkeley. It's been a place that has been deeply committed to academic excellence. It's been one of the great universities of the 20th century and 21st, certainly. But it's also been a place because of its location, because of its mission, that has put a lot of effort into the diversity of its student body, diversity of its faculty, increasingly into its relations with the community, and it is, of course, in Harlem. And so in that sense, I don't feel that there's a huge break taking place. But at the same time, one of the things that I hear repeatedly as I talk to groups both on campus and alumni groups at various clubs and other receptions and meetings I've had over the course of the last few months, I keep hearing this great pride in the institution, but also a great sense of commitment and loyalty to the institution because of its being public. And that, to me, is very exciting. It adds a dimension to life here that, to me, is like having your cake and eating it, too.
How do you feel about online education? That's something that Governor Jerry Brown is a big proponent of, and it's, you know, kind of big here in the Bay Area, and some experiments have worked well and some have failed miserably. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, first, interestingly enough, we at Columbia began a whole venture in online education in the 1990s that turned out to fail. Hmm. It was another version of the dot-com bubble that didn't quite work out. And I look at some of the debates about MOOCs, that is to say these massive open online courses that dominate the discussion about online education now. And I think, well, you know, we don't even know what these are going to look like in 2 or 3 years. So much has happened even in the last year and a half. So every month the landscape changes. But at the same time, we know that that online is here. I mean, all students are using online technology as they're taking their courses. Now, obviously, there are questions that will have to be addressed about, you know, who gets credit, under what kinds of conditions, how performance is evaluated, what it means to differentiate between online and more traditional residential forms of education. But, you know, nothing's going to be resolved right away. Unfortunately, there's no magic bullet. This is not going to reduce costs. In fact, right now, I think it costs more to develop a course online than it does just to have it taught in the old way with lecture notes, however dusty they might be. It costs less to dust them off. But the short answer is, I don't think there's something that's going to replace residential education anytime soon. I certainly hope not. And we are going to have to work very hard to keep engaging in serious and productive ways with the opportunities that exist out there without making some serious mistakes by trying something that will end up shortchanging students and not really doing the kinds of things that we want to do here.
So as you mentioned, we're here in 2013. You just started this job. It's hard to predict the future into, you know, so many parts of the world are changing so quickly that it's hard to look 5 or even 10 years into the future. But I'm going to ask you to do that. You're a historian. You can handle this. What do you want your legacy to be?
I would like to think of several things. First of all, I would like the undergraduate experience at Berkeley to be thought of generally that is able to rival the best kind of liberal arts undergraduate experience in the smallest and most well-endowed New England private school, because I believe that what Berkeley can offer for the citizens of the state of California and indeed the citizens of the world is the best of both worlds, a context in which they can have this engaged and very connected kind of education that then introduces them to the extraordinary resources of the university at large. But to make clear the centrality of and the excellence of the undergraduate experience at a place like Berkeley would be something I would like to have remembered, and the importance and the continued importance of the liberal arts as the base then for everything that students go on to do, whether it's doing advanced work in medicine, in high-energy particle physics, or in nanoscience and the fabrication of new kinds of materials that are going to make for a different kind of built environment in the 21st and later centuries.